You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is
Kristen Miller.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web. Beware the Chinaman by Stephen Taylor. The future is electric, but who holds the power? Sent by government agent Howard to pick up a stolen hard drive, Danny soon finds himself fighting for his life as he's chased across Europe by the mysterious and deadly Chinaman. The hard drive holds information to expose an organization called the Board, and its chairman wants it back. The Board's plan is to save the planet and gain global dominance through its ecological empire. The execution of the plan is by any means necessary. Beware the Chinaman, the new thriller by Stephen Taylor. Unleashing Iron, Book 3 of the Unwilling Souls series by Gregory D. Little, arrives April 24th and is available for pre-order now. Cess Lucani has one mission: keep humankind's murderous gods imprisoned. She's about to fail. The gods have achieved the unthinkable, inhabiting human avatars from within their prison's walls. They now gather followers and work to break it open from the outside. One of those avatars is Cess's own father. Just as all seems lost, Cess learns of a recently unearthed artifact so powerful that it can repair the prison and save her father from the possession that is killing him. But in the wrong hands, the artifact could demolish the prison instead of repairing it, and it's already been stolen. In a desperate race to control the object that will save or end the world, Cess faces a devastating choice as she realizes that no one is immune to the artifact's ancient promise of forgotten power. Not her family, not her friends, not even herself. Unleashing Iron is available for pre-order now. Order before April 24th to get the special sale price. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Kristen Miller on the show with me today. She has a phenomenal new psychological thriller. It's called In Her Shadow. And I'll tell you what, Kristen, this book creeped me out in the very best way. And I think people are really going to love it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so good to hear.
Yeah. Kristen, we begin each show with the same question. And that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
That's a great question. I was never really much of a creative writer growing up. Believe it or not, I really love writing essays, which, you know, I realized I had a problem when I wrote my master thesis and really enjoyed it. But like creatively, I never really felt like I could do that. I loved reading though. I was a voracious reader, always have been. And for whatever reason in college, probably because I was reading so many textbooks, I stopped reading for pleasure. And shortly after college, my husband and I, you know, we had a couple children, and I was going through a rough patch of postpartum depression. And my husband said, he goes, you know, you used to love to read, and I don't really see you reading anymore. And he said, why don't you take all day long, go to Barnes and Noble, just walk around, spend all day, and, you know, maybe that'll recharge your batteries. And I just started bawling. Like, I just cried my eyes out because to me, all day in a bookstore, that was heaven, right?
Right.
And so I thought, I don't have, as a new mother, I don't have a lot of time to read. So I really want to read a book that really, really grips me. And so I thought, I want to read a book about, I don't know, a woman who has maybe like a vision of her death before it happens. And she has to, you know, try to work with a detective to like solve the crime, find the killer before he finds her. Like, I think that sounds great. I went and I walked around that bookstore all day long, and I came home empty handed. And my husband's like, you were there all day. You didn't come home with a single book. And I said, because the book that I really want to read doesn't exist. And he goes, why don't you write it? And I said, are you kidding me? Like, who writes books? You know, who does that? And he goes, just don't tell anyone you're doing it. Write a page a day. And if you wrote a page a day, you'd have a book in a year. And I said, yeah, you know, maybe so. And so I started writing while my kids napped and while they slept at night. And the book was written in 9 weeks. And what I discovered was that I really, really loved the process of writing. And so it just really took off from there.
Did the book become that story that you wanted to read?
As most first books go, I kind of, you know, threw everything but the kitchen sink into it. Right. So it was a terrible book. I mean, it was written very fast, but it was awful. And nobody should ever read that book ever. But what I did was, is I realized, well, I wrote it pretty fast. And if I could at least take a couple months and learn what to do to edit it, maybe it could be something great. So I went to the Romance Writers of America conference in Washington, D.C. that year, and was sitting at the bar next to Donald Moss, who's a, you know, famous literary agent. Just so happened. And he said, you know, what do you write? And I said, I don't even really know. Like, I don't even really know what I did to this story that I had in my head. And he goes, well, tell me about it. And then when I was done talking, he said, why don't you send it to me? I would love to read it. And of course, he didn't end up representing me, but because of his feedback, and I think his confidence in my storytelling ability, there was a kernel of something there that I decided to run with. And I ended up selling that book to a small press after I made, you know, tons of changes and completely rewrote it. But that's kind of what got me started on my writing journey.
That is such a fantastic story. You know, most writers have that desk drawer novel or trunk novel or, you know, something that, that because everybody, like you said, throws the entire kitchen sink at it. And, we, you know, it's all of the things we've ever wanted to say, you know, wind up in that book. And but, you know, what that does is it will, one, it lets us clean out, you know, all of that stuff that's been pent up for so long. Mm-hmm. But I think the main accomplishment from a book like that is proving to yourself that you can get from beginning to end. And because, you know, if you ask a room full of people, you know, 100 people, how many of you think you have a book in you? There would be a majority of people probably raise their hand.
Absolutely.
And then a year later, if you came back and polled those people and said, now, how many of you wrote that book? You would, you know, you'd be lucky to get one hand up because everybody, you know, we've got this innate storytelling thing about us. It's a human trait. Yet so many people don't feel like it's attainable or, you know, whatever it is. But, you know,
that's true.
That desk drawer novel I think that does more for rider confidence than any, you know, course or a workshop or whatever could do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where once you complete it and you go, you know, you take a step back and say, well, even if, you know, this isn't perfect, you know, Nora Roberts is famous for saying, you know, you can't edit a blank page.
Right.
And so once it's at least out there, you can learn what you need to do to be able to fix it, to make it great.
Right. Yeah. And I think for most of us, we're like, okay, now I need to go learn how to write.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because I started off writing romance, and in my first book, the hero dies at the end. And that was one of the things that Donald Moss was like, well, I'm pretty sure you don't write romance if you're killing your hero. And I was kind of, but in my head, that was the way that the story had to go. That was the way that it had to end. And so that kind of started in me, well, maybe I'm more of a storyteller than I thought, because if I at least have an understanding of this is where the natural progression of the story has to be, then maybe it's just that I'm, you know, don't have the tools that I need in order to build this into the type of story that's marketable, but at least that storytelling is there.
Yeah. In the heavily edited book that did get published, does the hero still die?
No, because I stuck with romance, and so the hero has to live.
It's a very,
you know, there
unromantic
has to be that
thing.
Happily ever after.
Right,
has to have that happily ever after. But I, growing up, I always loved mystery. Always loved really dark novels. When everybody was reading, you know, Anne of Green Gables and Sweet Valley High, I was reading John Saul and Dean Koontz and Stephen King. And I was reading those at like 11, 12, 13 years old. And so, believe it or not, like when I'm actually plotting a story, a lot of times, you know, my editor will have to say, you know, you can't be that dark, you know, you have to pull it back, or we can't have this character die. Like it has to be a little bit more lighthearted than that. And so I kind of all along had kind of a piece of that where I was maybe forcing myself into a genre that maybe wasn't fitting my natural, I guess, desires for where I wanted net stories to go. So when I made the jump to psychological suspense, it was actually a really natural fit.
Yeah, it sounds like it. What was that that decision like for you? Because it's not like you wrote a book that was a romance and then you decided to try something else. You're a really established name in romance. Was that difficult for you to? Because, you know, it's a whole new audience in a lot of cases, and it's a lot like starting over, it probably felt like. Tell me about that decision to make the jump.
Yeah, it's most of my stories, whether it's paranormal romance, I've written a few romantic suspense, there's always an element of mystery in them. You know, I have one contemporary series that maybe doesn't have any mystery in it at all. But the rest of them, I have 34, I think, romance novels that all have at least some element of mystery. And so that's always been inside me and a story that I always want to tell. And I had been under contract for so long and had a wonderful agent who had led me through the romance industry for a very long time. And then I found myself... I was self-publishing and traditional publishing. And I always say that I was, you know, pushing the snowball up the hill. Right. And I had gained traction in romance and everything's going really well. And then my mother-in-law had a heart attack. And I actually had to I had to cook and clean for my household. And then I had to drive to her house and, you know, cook and clean for her. And I kind of stepped away from the publishing world. I think it was 3 months. I didn't write a single word. I put all of my focus, on her, which is where that attention belonged. And at the end of the 3 months, my contracts were completely fulfilled. I don't even think at that point that I'd had a release date that was upcoming. And, I was parting ways with my agent for other reasons, not for this, but, so I found myself unagented, uncontracted, for the first time in a decade.
Wow.
And Yeah. And so my husband, he goes, what are you, you know, are you going to get back into riding? And I said, oh, absolutely. You know, that's not something that I can turn off. And he said, you know, where do you think you're going to go? What do you want to do? And I kind of felt like at that point I could really do anything that I wanted. And I said, you know, I really think that I want to try my hand at psychological suspense. And he said, again, you know, like the beacon of light, right, that gives me the inspiration. He goes, if you were ever going to do it, now is the time.
Right.
Now is the time when you're completely free to write the book of your heart. And so I really focused for a really long time on this story and was really excited by the prospect of being able to write this really dark psychological suspense the way that I had kind of always envisioned it. I had thoughts about it along the way, but.
Well, knowing all of that backstory for you, that brings up so many questions I want to ask. but first off, In Her Shadow, I think if the math in my head is going right, is your 35th novel? Is that right?
Yes.
And you've been doing this about a decade. You know, most writers are on, you know, kind of a book a year cycle. That is, you know, better than three novels per year. You talked about that first book and how you wrote it in 9 weeks, and that, you know, it wasn't up to your standards, but you know, you worked all that out. Is that kind of your natural writing speed? Are you a fast first drafter?
I typically am a fast first drafter. So I, my contemporary romances that don't have any mystery they kind of flew off my fingers. So it took me between 5.5 and 7 weeks to write. Wow. But that's, kind of an exception. Anytime I add more depth, more grit, more mystery, you know, subplots and, greater depth to the characters, maybe not so formulaic as romance can sometimes be, it takes me longer. And so it would maybe take me 3 months or 4 months to write a book like that. But even after that, you know, I'm going to take a couple of months to edit. So by the time you figure that, you know, you take 3 or 4 months to write and then 3 or 4 months to edit, I'm still probably in the ballpark of, you know, 2 or 3, maybe, if I can squeeze in a year.
Right.
Depending.
Right. So when you find yourself at this opportunity to start over from scratch, basically, when you start writing In Her Shadow, does that momentum come to you with this, or do you find yourself, does it feel more clunky because, for lack of a better term, and I know that you're not a formulaic writer, but when you write in a genre, there are certain genre concessions that
yes,
kind of become, second nature. And so you don't have to sit and think about, you know, should this character be this way or that way? Certain things just fall in line when you get accustomed to writing a certain way.
Right.
Did those kinds of roadblocks come up to you in writing this book?
You know, this book has had a few roadblocks along the way, but it wrote really fast and really smooth. I couldn't wait to get back to this book to get in these characters' heads. I really had so much fun. They are so twisted and demented and wonderfully awful people that, you know, I just couldn't wait to get back to seeing what they were going to do next. And if I remember right, I think I wrote In Her Shadow, the original draft, in 7 weeks. I wrote maybe 4 hours a day. And so that was quick for me. And I loved every second of it. And I thought, usually when I get to the end of a first draft, at least the storyline is solid. I knew where I was going ahead of time. And with this one, I felt like this is it. This is, it's not going to take much cleaning up after this. And then boy, was I wrong. there was a lot of work that needed to be done. I actually sent I was so confident about how the book was going. The first 50 pages, I thought to myself, I'm writing it so fast and it's the best I've ever written. I'm going to now seek an agent for this book, even though it wasn't finished. And so I sent it to Jill Marshall, Marshall Lyon Literary. And she said, I absolutely love it. I can't wait to see this when you're done. And so I knew that I'd had something special. And when I finished it, I was so excited. And then, of course, when we sold it, Kate Misiak from Random House, who's so amazing, had a completely, maybe not a completely different vision. She had a grand vision for what this book could really be. And so it spent almost maybe 2 years, a year and a half in serious edits to take the kernel of this story and really turn it into something magical. So some of those pitfalls that you were talking about, they're definitely there.
As you were talking there, I wrote down on a piece of paper, this book is full of wonderfully awful people, as your yeah. words. One thing that is kind of glaring difference in this book and your previous work is that in romance we quickly want to meet characters and we want to care about them. We want to root for them. We want to we want characters that, of course, you know, have adversity and fall into all sorts of traps and you know the, yes. the tension that you know that great drama breeds. But we want to care about these people and we want to see them do well. We want to see them have a happily ever after. We want to, you know, have characters that we can, you know, get behind. When we first meet Colleen Roper, in her shadow, mm-hmm. She is a secretary who, is working for her boss who has gotten her pregnant and she right. she knows that he's married. You know, while there are sympathies there, this is not a cast of characters that are immediately lovable. You know, we don't want to just put our arms around them.
Correct.
Yeah. So what was that like, you know, when dealing with these flawed characters and, you know, how do you make a reader care about people that are making bad decisions and, you know, winding up in worse and worse trouble.
You know, I think it's really funny that you picked up on that. I was first plotting this story. I met with a writer friend and I'm from California. So I was in the Bay Area and I was talking with a writer friend and I was telling her about all these people and these characters. And she goes, okay, so who's the really sympathetic one that the reader is really going to attach to and really get behind? And it took me, of course, as the first draft, it took me a really long time to answer that question because so all of the characters in this book are so, I don't want to say devious, complex. and you have to be careful who you root for and who you really want to get behind.
Right.
Because a lot of they're also maybe untrustworthy or, and there's kind of an undercurrent that, you know, not everybody is kind of how they appear. And it was really fun to create because, you know, when you first meet somebody, you know, maybe, you know, they're putting on pretenses and maybe they're not exactly saying, you know, the issues that they're having. Maybe they're having problems that you don't know about. And so it was kind of felt like, you know, I was peeling back the layers to give reader a glimpse of what these, you know, perfectly imperfect people, what they might be doing in their lives. And so as Colleen kind of is whisked away to Michael's estate, Ravenwood, you kind of get to be in her shoes and feel what that might feel like. To feel like you don't belong in this grand world, but really, really want to have a part of that. And so that was really fun to explore. But to answer your question, yeah, you know, to make a really super sympathetic character, in a book where, you know, I have to kind of keep that tension. I have to keep it where the reader is a little bit, you know, doesn't really have solid footing with anybody. And that's a really delicate balance to have as a writer.
Right.
I remember telling my husband one day I came home from the coffee shop and I said, if I can pull this off, you know, by the end, it's going to be really amazing to be able to make you be in the viewpoints of these people and without giving anything away, being able to feel like you were in the middle of it all along, but then didn't kind of realize it until I told you to, Would be a really special thing if I can accomplish that. And thanks to the help of all of the wonderful editors who've had a hand in the book, I think it really brought it to life the way that that it deserved to be.
Well, what's really interesting, and I would love to hear your take on writing such a character as Colleen, who she finds herself, and we've alluded to this a little bit, that she finds herself at this estate with her, you know, boyfriend slash boss Ravenwood, and you know, she's surrounded by people, by staff and things that don't trust her, that don't like her. They're obviously, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? They have a relationship with the former woman of the house, and you know, in her shadow is a perfect description of where she finds herself. And then her boyfriend slash boss, you know, comes under suspicion of murder when the wife's bones are found. And then Colleen finds herself surrounded in an unfamiliar place with unfamiliar people and unfamiliar people that don't have, any sympathies for her.
Right.
How do you balance the character of Colleen, where she's in a situation like this, where she seems to have no agency whatsoever? How do you just not make her completely helpless and someone that we have pity on? How do you keep her a dynamic character in a situation like this?
That's a great question. It was really difficult because I didn't want to make her helpless and I didn't want to make her a victim. But right from the beginning, which of course isn't giving anything away, from the initial scene, it starts with, you know, Colleen's murder. And so the entire book is a countdown to Colleen's murder. And so I had to make sure I had to give her some sort of strength. But also she has such an intense longing just to be loved. And she just truly loves this man with all of her being, and keeps feeling like she's trying to fill these shoes of his, former wife, and just keeps failing. And I think that's where part of the sympathy from the reader's standpoint will come in, because I think there's a whole lot of situations in this world where you have to put yourself out there and maybe don't really feel like, you know, you are able to stand up and be the person that you want to be. I feel like, you know, imposter syndrome is real. And I think that people are going to relate to Colleen in that way. And she is, I have to be really careful how I kind of talk about all of these characters, but I feel like because she's trying so earnestly to really find a place that she belongs, that she can call home, and she really just honestly wants a family in this place and to fit in. And the more obstacles are thrown at her by the staff and by the neighbors, the more complicated that gets for her.
I've heard comparisons in her shadow to Rebecca, and I know that was an inspiration for the book. Can you talk a little bit about that? And were there other works of fiction that inspired you? And I know that you alluded to Dean Koontz and Stephen King earlier, and I got to have Dean Koontz on the show a few days ago, and man, that was a high water mark for me.
Amazing.
Yeah, talk about literary influences and taking those influences and bringing them into a brand new story that is, you know, from the depths of your mind.
So Rebecca has always been my favorite novel. I usually don't reread novels. Once I've read it once, I'm done and that's it. But there is something about Rebecca. I've read it 5 times. Every single winter, I want to read it again when it starts to rain and get kind of dreary. I want to go back to Manderley. I want to be sucked into that world again. And there is something to me about, you know, somebody who's trying to come to this place to start this new life, but then you just kind of, the past won't stay buried, right? And I think there's something to that. And there was a grain of that in the development of this story. It didn't really start off where I said, I want to write a modern retelling of Rebecca, where it actually, the blend of inspiration for this story, where it came from was my husband and I were driving up the Northern California coastline on Highway 1. It was a really rainy, dreary day. The weather was awful. And we decided to kind of take this back road right up to the cliff, right on the edge, very close to like 30 minutes south of San Francisco. But it's a really secluded area. And we found this distillery that was really popular during Prohibition. The lights were all off. We didn't know if they were open. We kind of feel very much like Goonies, right? We thought we were like, you know, seeking reprieve from the weather. And we run into this building and we were the only people there. And it's the Moss Beach Distillery. And we sat down and we were greeted by this waiter who told us tales of the blue lady who haunts the restaurant. And immediately, because I love a good mystery, I'm, you know, completely enraptured by this story of a woman who had left her abusive husband and had moved to this place to find sanctuary a very long time ago and fell in love with the pianist at the distillery. Well, it wasn't a couple months after their love affair, the husband found the woman and they had a brawl in the distillery. And the next morning, the husband was gone. The blue lady who always dressed in blue, that's why they called her that. Her body was found in the surf below the distillery. And the piano player would play songs for her every night. So he survived and would continue to play for her memory. And the distillery still reserves a table for the blue lady. It was her favorite table where she would listen to her lover play. And they say that she still haunts the distillery. There's been many sightings, of her there. Many TV shows, have gone to try to, you know, debunk, the ghost story. And so as I'm walking through this really sleepy town, and it's really super dreary and it's giving me these, you know, Manderley type, feel with the flowers and the smells. And I thought to myself, if I could blend these two into a really amazing story about a man whose wife has died, but regardless whether she's there in physical form or not, her presence is very powerful and very profound. And that a new woman is brought to this place and is having to kind of find her footing and find herself amid the ghosts that are left behind, I thought would be really interesting. That was pretty much, with the exception of, you know, the house staff that also doesn't like Colleen, that would probably be the extent of the relation between In Her Shadow and Rebecca. But the inspiration was definitely there, and a part of my heart as I was writing it. So this book is very much a blend of kind of those two stories as they kind of rolled around in my head.
Right. One of the hallmarks of psychological suspense is the idea that we as readers can never be fully sure of anything, because mm-hmm. what we think we know about our protagonist could change in a moment. The motivations that we think we are sure of our protagonist and of the antagonist could all change on a moment's notice. And, right. You know, that's one of the things that we love about psychological suspense, was because people do the craziest things for the craziest reasons. And yes. It's just so fun watching. In Her Shadow is no different. You completely pull the rug out from under us, more times than I can count in this book. How did that feel to write to you, you know, coming from a genre that has very well-defined genre conventions that, you know, and you talked about having yes. those conversations with your editors and, you know, having mm-hmm. to stay, you know, within certain boundaries. The psychological suspense, a lot of those boundaries are fluid at the very best.
Right.
What was that like to get to write with the, you know, kind of with the gloves off or unfettered?
It was really freeing. I felt like you know, I could kind of develop the story naturally, manipulating these characters, as awful as that sounds, but manipulating these characters how I saw that the story kind of how it needed to fit. And I always refer to the story like a puzzle, because I had to be very careful with the different points of view. There's many different points of view in the story, multiple first person. And so I often would say that I felt like I had to be very heavy-handed with this book, in the sense that I had to, during one scene, I had to really try to make the reader look a certain way. Like, right now, I only want you to be suspecting this person. And then in the next chapter, I need you to look over here. And I need you now to be suspecting this person. And then in the next chapter, okay, I need you to, like, follow me. And then I need you to look at this person very specifically. And so I felt like I was very much leading the reader one way and then the other. And I felt very much a part of that process, more so than any romance novel I've ever written. In romance, it was very much about creating a feeling, that really happy, loving, it, you know, many of them had mystery elements in it, but it's about feeling safe, and it's about your journey to finding love. And this was very much like the deterioration of relationships behind closed doors, unreliable narrators all around. There is growth, and they are there are characters that are dynamic that do change, but and that, I guess, was sort of the same. But the manipulation, I think, creates kind of a really wild ride that I'm not able to do in romance. So that part was a lot of fun.
The book is called In Her Shadow. When you're hearing this, it's out, available everywhere. Kristen, I love this book so much. I'm afraid to talk more about
it. Thank you. I know.
Because I'm afraid
to
give away too much. But
I know.
You know, when in a time where we're all, you know, locked up at home and looking for things to do, I tell you what, I know lots of people are catching up on reading that they've been wanting to do. Mm-hmm. And this is a fantastic book to have in your read pile, that is for sure. Kristen, if people are...
Thank you just so much.
You're welcome. I love the book, and I'm recommending it to everyone. If people are just learning about you and want to, you know, dig into all the great stuff that you do, is there a place where they can connect with you online?
So, as always, you can look on my website. So it's kristenmiller.net. I'm also on Facebook at Author Kristen Miller. And, you know, anytime anybody wants to reach out, I'm happy to talk about my books or the writing process in general.
Absolutely. We're going to send everyone to see you and to pick up In Her Shadow, which is out everywhere now. Thank you for taking time to come on the show today, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Before We Ever Spoke, by Dan Largent. Cleveland, Ohio, 2006. After a chance encounter, three people soon find out that life can sometimes thrust us into the public eye, even when taking great measures to avoid it. Cooper Madison was the best pitcher in baseball after being drafted number one overall in 1996 from the small Gulf Coast town of Pass Christiane, Mississippi. One year after announcing his sudden and shocking retirement, he finds himself seeking anonymity in Cleveland, Ohio. Kara Knox is the youngest sibling to three older brothers. After a tragic work accident to her closest relative, she has built up a tough exterior as she begins her final year of college at Cleveland State University. Jason Knox, Kara's oldest brother, is the lead detective on Cleveland's Edgewater Park killer case. After months without a suspect, he's feeling the heat from his media-hungry chief. Serendipity intervenes, and all three learn that perception and reality are paths that rarely ever intersect. Before We Ever Spoke, by Dan Largent. Hey folks, you really ought to check out Patricia Gillam's Heroes of Corvus series. Book one is called A Superhero's Duty, a fight between a second-generation superhero named Red Bolt and a villain-for-hire named Icarus goes terribly wrong, resulting in the drowning deaths of three innocent civilians and orphaning a six-year-old boy. Racked with guilt, Red Bolt visits Cameron Wilson at the hospital every night and won't leave the boy's side until he falls asleep. Befriended by a night shift nurse, the man in costume begins to disclose what really happened after the fight and why he feels the death of Cameron's parents and sister fall on his actions. A superhero didn't survive that night, and Cameron and the rest of the city are not out of danger. A Superhero's Duty, Book 1 of The Heroes of Corvus by Patricia Gillam. Get this series now.